They change cultures. They're heat seekers. They run at adversity and embrace change. These are the Room Tilters.
Somebody who can change the temperature in a room when they walk in. Mm. And that's metaphorical for somebody who can influence those around them and make such an impact quickly, emphatically, and long-lasting, whether it be an organization, a team, a relationship, whatever it might be.
This is the Room Tilters podcast, presented by Limitless Minds. Co-hosts DJ Eitzen and Harry Wilson, founders of peak performance and leadership consulting company, Limitless Minds, explore how the best and brightest change the temperature in a room. From sports, the military, entertainment and media, clinical psychologists to CEOs, this podcast will navigate what it takes to think big and go far. And now, DJ and Harry.
In Major League Baseball, if you fail 70% of the time at the plate, you're seen as one of the best to ever do it. Batting 300 is an almost guaranteed shoe-in for the Hall of Fame. Failure is expected. And in fact, it happens every day for most players. So I'm excited to talk to our guest today, Hannah Huseman, who is a mental conditioning coach for the Philadelphia Phillies. We got a little insight into the psyche of these athletes. We also learned a little bit about what it's like to be a female in a male-dominated sport and how she has the ability to shift performers' mindset to accept change and pressure. Enjoy. So listen, as we get started, you know, you are a mental skills coach in Major League Baseball. For those that know that it's, you know, we're recording this in late August of 2020. So we're right in the throes of the pandemic and COVID. But, you know, Major League Baseball's come back. You know, it hasn't come without any hiccups and, you know, certainly, but, you know, what I know about that level of play, right, especially in Major League Baseball is obviously the impact of the mental game on your daily performance. You know, it's, you know, many would say the kind of the cliche story is, you know, you can fail 70% of the time and be in the Hall of Fame, you know, right. And so what is it like, being in a role like yours in Major League Baseball during this pandemic, and how are players responding?
Yeah, it's funny because, you know, people are like, oh, you're home, like you get to kind of hang out. And I'm like, well, not exactly. It's almost the exact same as I would be in season with like the number of touches, but probably heightened double. It's probably double the work right now, just because, you know, we have this whole thing that we've never been through, right? And I kind of keep joking, like, I'm supporting people through a pandemic, and I don't know how to support people through a pandemic. I don't know how to support myself through a pandemic. And right. So it's a lot of listening. It's a lot of, okay, let me meet you wherever you are. And I'm feeling the same way. So maybe we can kind of throw ideas off of each other and figure out, okay, I've tried this. It really worked for me this day. I tried this. This absolutely didn't work for me. Maybe you can try it. So it's definitely unique and new. But as far as like workload goes, it's almost exactly the same. But instead of all in person, it's all on Zoom and all on the phone and FaceTime. And so, you know, right now I'd typically be on the road 25 to 27 days a month during season.
Where's home right now?
I'm in Chattanooga, Tennessee. Okay. So yeah, it looks really different, but it's a lot of the same thing. And just still supporting everyone the same way, like having monthly conversations. Some people are weekly conversations, and supporting them and helping them. And sometimes it's based around performance, but sometimes it's around just like staying sane in this, right? And like your overall well-being as a human, right? And how do you stay motivated to keep working when you don't know if there's going to be a season, or when you don't know when's the next time you're going to actually be on a field and face hitters or whatever it is. And so it's fun, kind of juggling the same old things that we usually talk about with an added really big, huge cloud that we can't control anything about. And so it's like a big old fat thing that we have to deal with on top of all of the other normal things. So it's been run constantly and supporting people. And so it's been challenging, and it looks weird. And I think Zoom calls drain you faster than in person does, because you're sitting there staring at yourself, and it's just harder. And I don't know why, but.
Well, it's not as natural, right? I mean, like, you know, you kind of move your camera because you realize there's something in the background you don't want somebody to see. You know, you got your, maybe a kid or a dog running around in the background, you know, all the things that you wouldn't necessarily do if you were just sitting face to face with somebody.
Honey's running around somewhere.
Yeah, exactly.
So what made you want to get into this field? And, you know, tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. So I mean, typical sports world growing up, right? I played sports my whole life. I have a younger brother. We're 21 months apart. So we grew up, you know, beating the heck out of each other all the time, constantly, and like super competitive. And so I kind of always knew I wanted to stay in the sports realm. That's when I was happiest. That's when I was most confident and enthusiastic about my job. And I just didn't really know to what capacity. So my undergrad degree was in exercise science. I thought I was going to be a strength and conditioning coach for a little bit. I thought I was going to coach softball for a little bit. Like, really just didn't know what my niche was. And then my senior year, I took an elective class. So I'm like, it's like senior year spring semester, right? Last semester of college, kind of just taking classes to fill in the classes. And I took a sports psychology class and I was like, are you kidding? Like, what is this? How have I not heard about this? And how can I learn everything I possibly can about this? Right. And at this point it was kind of too late for my own career because I knew I wasn't going to go pro in softball or past college. And so it was almost like, oh my gosh, is this what's going to get me into this world? And so I had an incredible professor, Dr. Howard Baptiste, and she like introduced me to everything, showed me where she went and got her master's and her PhD. And so then I started looking at master's programs and that's how I ended up at UT. And it kind of all like fell into place. Like it was like, this is exactly what I'm supposed to be doing. And it's kind of neat how it's worked out, but yeah, just a random elective class. And I was like, holy cow, like this is the capacity of how I want to be in sport.
Yeah. Like you knew that was the lane that you wanted to be in. And you know what, Harry, it's funny. I follow you too, Hannah. We're kind of super fans, huh? Yeah. Like Harry, I kind of feel like one. I follow you too on LinkedIn. But I love what I see though when you're on LinkedIn is the passion behind what you do. And like, you know, you see a lot of people, it takes them years for them to be able to find something that they're passionate about and get into it. You did it very early on in your career, which is awesome. You've obviously had some success. Tell me about a little bit about like, you know, there's some teams that choose to have a mental conditioning expert and some that don't. You know, tell me a little bit about what it is that you guys bring to the table and why somebody would choose to have somebody like you on board.
Yeah. And it's funny because it's kind of becoming the norm now. It's almost like weird if people don't have it now. And I think Major League Baseball is a great indicator of really somebody who's buying into it, believing it's part of the culture and believing that if we're trying to do everything in our power to make these players the best they can possibly be, we cannot neglect the mental side of the game. I mean, talk to anybody about baseball in general. And it's like 100% chance they're going to bring up something about the mental game, whether it's we fail all the time or it's such a long game, like you talk to yourself all the time, whatever it is. It's like an individual sport, but in a team sport, right setting, and they're going to bring up the mentality. And then my next question is, well, how much are you working on the mental side of the game? And it's like this like awkward silence where they're like killing themselves, you know, to work on their physical aspects of the game, right? Like conditioning, strength and conditioning, nutrition, sprints, all the agility work, right? From pitching to hitting to all the individual stuff that you're doing physically and you're crushing it. You're doing great, but like, what are you doing mentally? And so I think it's becoming more and more noticeable that the competition's getting, like the higher you go, the closer it gets, right? And so it's kind of like, what's going to separate you? And I think more and more people are starting to realize that one of the edges you can have over your opponent is the mental component. And when you've got two guys who throw the same speed, throw the same pitches, or the same height, and have virtually the same thing to offer, what's the separator? And it's like, who can perform under pressure? Like, that's pretty much what it comes down to. And can you perform when we need you to perform the most? Like in the craziest situation, all the stress is on the line. Can you still do what you do best? Mm-hmm. And it like sounds like such a simple concept, but it's incredibly challenging. And who can perform under that? And so it's funny because even fresh out of grad school, I applied for an internship and it was the only internship then. And it was with the Pittsburgh Pirates. And I ended up getting it, but it was like, that was the only opportunity. Like, it was kind of like, what else? If I don't get this, I don't know what I'm going to do. Mm-hmm. And then it's funny now we have four with the Phillies. We have four mental skills coaches with the Phillies alone. And I think almost all Major League Baseball teams have people on staff. And if they don't, they've got someone or multiple people at least contracted out so that the players can work with them. But now you have, I mean, it's rare to even find one on a team. Like most of the time you have two, threes, and I think some teams have up to six or seven now. So it's really cool how it's growing. And I think like the NBA and the NFL are really good on the mental health side. And I think they're following on the mental performance side, which is kind of what I talk about a lot. I think there's a big difference, but there are some overlapping things in mental health and mental performance. But I think it's going to continue to grow and more people are realizing this isn't just something that people have. This is something that we can actually work on and train and get better.
It's a skill.
Yeah. It's mental skills, right? We can become better baseball players, better performers, and better people. Like, why would we not be doing this? Why would we not?
Well, I mean, right. I mean, I think as a skill, and you think of any skill that you can think of, you know, there's a way to get to teach it and to learn it, to improve it. And so, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, and we've, what we've done at Limitless Minds is we've taken some of the principles that, that you and your peers are teaching in the athlete realm or the sports realm and brought it to the corporate athlete. And doing some of the same things, because it's, you know, when you get into the corporate world, especially like in the worlds that DJ and I've come from, like sales, and where it's like super competitive, high risk, high reward, you eat what you kill, that kind of stuff, you know, you can't hide from your results, just like you can on the field. Like you go for three, you go for three, you know, so you have to turn the page and the next day, right, or whatever it is. And so, you know, it's real. And you know, my question is, you know, when the one thing we do with our corporate athletes is we'll train the leaders. We also like to train our company. We like to train the, you know, the performers, like the everyday individual contributors as well. But we do both. So that kind of way that so that way the language is kind of spread across the organization. And it's not just the players, if you will, or the sales reps that are getting it, but also their coaches. Are you spending time with coaching staff as well?
I love that question, because when I first started out, my answer would have been no. Mm-hmm. My answer would have been like, no, we spend all our time with the players. Like, what do you mean? I'm hired. I'm here to make the players better. And my internship, I learned from an incredible mentor, Bernie Holiday, who's still with the Pirates right now. He's the director of mental conditioning there. But he told me and taught me three things. So the number one most important part of mental skills coaching in a Major League Baseball organization, probably for you guys too, is culture. Mm-hmm. Number one is culture. Number two is coaches. Number three is players. And like, at first I'm like, wait, what? Like, no, like what? I'm hired to like work with the players. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
And then you start to break it down and you realize, like, now I like couldn't agree with it more, because it all starts with the culture, right? If mental performance isn't a part of the culture, it's never going to be taken seriously, right? It's always going to be the thing you have to do at the end of the day, once you're done with all the things you're supposed to do. And now it's like, oh, we have this random 30-minute talk that I have to do right now. Or do I have to do this? Or like, why are we even doing this? Right. Instead of like, no, just like you do yoga during the day, you're going to go to mental skills meetings during the day, right, whether it's a workshop or a one-on-one meeting. And so all of a sudden it's like, if you're a Philadelphia Philly baseball player, you're going to mental skills. Like you're going to mental performance. Like whether you're the best, whether you're the most mentally tough person we've ever met or the worst mentally tough, right? Or you have no mental toughness. And so I think it all starts with that. And then right after that is the coaches, because we can't be everywhere at once. Right. I said there's four, which is awesome, but there's only four. Like it's four people with like 300 plus players. Right.
Yeah.
But we have a ton of coaching staff. We have 70, 80, 90 coaches who are everywhere. And if you break it down, it's like, I don't know, roughly like 15 players per each coach, like under each direct coach. And so they have the direct touches. So if we can get them on board and even educate them a little bit and make them like extensions of us as mental skills coaches, then all of a sudden we're making touches on a daily basis when we're not even there. And so, and then you have coaches talking about it. Like somebody brings up something mental, they're like, hey, mental skills coach, did you talk to them? Let's talk about it and figure it out, right? So you're not even there and people are advocating for you. And what the coaches make important, the players make important. And so and then we get to support the coaches too. Like we get to have challenging conversations with the coaches on like how they can not only improve the players from a mental skill standpoint, but how they can improve themselves too.
That's right.
And which has created some super cool dialogues.
Well, I found that a lot of time, Hannah, that like, you know, whether it be the corporate athlete or the corporate environment or even a sports environment, it's human nature, especially when you're in a leadership role or you have people reporting to you or you're leading a group of women or men, you think that like, you know, naturally you kind of assume that you've got it figured out, right? And so you immediately go to like, how can I employ this knowledge that I have on my people, on my team, on my players? But in reality, like, none of us, you know, from a growth mindset perspective, and our CEO and co-founder Trevor Moad says, you don't have to be sick to get better. We're all working towards like trying to improve. And honestly, we have a lot of blind spots. Some of us kind of suck at this and we're leading people, right? And so I think that seems to be something that I've noticed in the corporate space, and also being an athlete myself, like, you know, sometimes, you know, coach don't got it yet either, right? And so we're doing this together, you know?
I laugh all the time because I'm like, I'm a mental skills coach. And like, get me on the golf course and like, nobody would ever know that I have any mental skills training at all. Like, cause I'm crazy. Like I never practice, but I go out there and I get so freaking mad because I can't perform because I have a certain standard. And like,
yes,
my husband's jokingly like, aren't you a mental skills coach? And I'm like, just cause I'm a mental skills coach doesn't mean I can hold them all together.
Man. As you're throwing the golf club,
but
right?
I think that is so beautiful, right? It's like,
yes,
we're always evolving. We're human beings. We're never going to be perfect, but it's like, how can you at least hone the skills so you at least are aware, like, okay, I know I'm not being solid mentally right now, but at least I know that. And at least I know, like, if I really wanted to be, I could implement this. But No, and I love the term corporate athletes. I think I might steal that.
Yeah, we stole it too. You know, it's kind of one of those things where
I love it.
I'm not sure who came up with it, but I read it somewhere.
I think that might have been the HPI.
It's probably, I think, Human Performance Institute. I think that's what they call their ecosystem, their world.
You know, it leads me into the next question. You give the golf example, and obviously every day we come up with, you know, different challenges and adversities. How do you mentally condition yourself? Like, what do you do to sharpen your saw?
So great question. So my hardest thing is shutting my brain off, because like I've always been this way. I've always been wired to, like, when I'm reading something, how can I implement it into my work? Right. Like it's very hard for me to read for fun. Like I was telling somebody the other day, even like reading Harry Potter, like I'm like, wow, he's really resilient. Like I could probably use this as a lesson, you know? And it's like, what? Like, can I just read it to read it? Like, can I put the pen down and just like do that? And it's very hard for me to do that. And I always have to be on, I always have to be in the present moment when I'm talking to somebody, because in order for me to be the best mental skills coach I can be, I have to be in that moment with whoever it is that I am, like, right? To be the best podcast guest I could be, I need to be in this moment. I can't be on my phone, can't be worrying about other things, which is another reason why I think it's hard to do it at home. So for me, it's my biggest thing that I try to work on is mindfulness, because it gives me a moment where I can stop. It gives me a moment where I get to turn my brain off and just kind of notice where it's going, what's happening. And I get to create that almost alone time and that quiet time that I really typically don't get on a day-to-day basis. And I actually, like, I was talking to my primary care physician, just a regular doctor's visit. And she was like, she like mandated alone time. And she was like, not working out either, because I was like, I'm crushing my workouts, because I used to think that was my getaway, right? I just go work out, don't think. But like, then I'm like destroying myself physically. So now mentally I'm drained, physically I'm drained. By the end of the day, I'm like, I have a migraine and all these things. And it's like, at what point can you shut it all off? And I'm like, I don't. From the moment I wake up to the moment I go to bed, I don't. And so it's really hard for me to shut it off. And so alone time, wrapped in some mindfulness, wrapped in some really quiet, nothing, just mindless times, I think is what I try to work on a pretty consistent basis.
How much, in your process with mindfulness, how much is visualization a part of that process? Is it a part of the process? Is that a totally different tool, exercise?
For me, it is. Mm-hmm. For me, it is, because I think, like, and I love visualization, especially like if I'm about to do a presentation or something like that. Like, I absolutely like go stand in front of, my mom taught me that when I was in like when I was in eighth grade, right? And had my first speech, she was like, go sit in front of the mirror and pretend like you're presenting. And now I'm like, I love doing that. And so I think if I have something big, like what my performances are now, whether it's public speaking or presentations or keynote talks, whatever it is, I definitely do that. But as far as like shutting my brain down and getting that quiet time, it's really just mindfulness and like being still, and really trying to just quiet everything. But also become aware of everything too. And it's funny, like sometimes I'll pop out of that and run straight to my journal and write down like 10 things that I thought about during it. But at least I wasn't doing it while I was in the middle. Like, it's so hard. It's so hard to shut your brain off.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I mean, and it feels like this, you know, this concept of meditation or really mindfulness altogether, right? Mindset training and some visualization, these types of tools and everything is a growing market, growing space, growing concept, whatever you want to call it. You know, I think that, whatever, 10 years ago, you know, I think that people thought that if you're going to go and get a mindset coach or a sports psychologist or whatever in that realm, that something's wrong with you. You know what I mean? Now, like, as you mentioned earlier, now I feel like it's really becoming, you know, clear that it's a competitive advantage, whether you're a corporate athlete or an athlete or just a, you know, or if you don't consider yourself a corporate athlete and you're just a business person or a mother, a father, all these different things. And so, you know, like I was going to ask you, like, where do you think this industry, if you will, is headed? Like, especially when you think about just kind of direct to consumer, do you have like some sort of theories on where this may be headed in the future?
Yeah. I think it's funny, just taking a step back. The example I always talk about is going to the dentist, mm-hmm. right? Like a long time ago, like nobody went to the dentist until their teeth were falling out. Right. And then eventually someone was like, hey, maybe if we go like once every 6 months and get our teeth clean, like we don't have right. to go when our teeth are fall. Like maybe the teeth won't even fall out. And so I kind of think like that's where mental skills is, right? It's like people are like, wait, we don't have to wait for all hell to break loose. We don't have to wait till rock bottom, till we're failing, or till we get fired, or till we get released or cut, and it's too late, right? We can actually be proactive about it, which is, I talk a lot about mental skills as being proactive rather than reactive. And that kind of goes to what you guys were saying earlier. Like, we're not only here to fix people, right? We're here to help you. We're here to make you stronger. Just like your strength and conditioning coaches are making you stronger physically, we're here to make you stronger mentally. Nothing has to be wrong for you to come talk to us. In fact, most of the people we talk to don't have anything wrong mentally, but we're just trying to figure out, okay, what are your strengths? What are your weaknesses? And how can we make those weaknesses a little bit stronger to maybe get you a little bit further than you would have if you didn't train it. But I think it's heading in a crazy good direction. I think even just in the last 5 years since I've really been deep into the field, especially in the baseball world, like, it's already grown significantly. Mm-hmm. And yeah. I don't know, like in baseball, like a good example is, you know, we have minor league baseball. We have like 8 minor league teams. And at every level, there's an athletic trainer. There's a strength and conditioning coach. And like, will we eventually get to, at every level, there's a mental skills coach. Like, I know some teams are already kind of experimenting with that. And so I think it's just going to be more and more and more. And then I know the military and the army takes it very seriously. And I'm like, just by getting like some messages I've been getting about the corporate world and like people being interested in it and like sales teams and all this stuff, like, I only think it's going to keep going and keep getting more and more like bigger. And I think people are finally starting to realize the difference between like motivation and mental skills, right? Yes. Just like quick hitting, rah, rah, listen to this little video. That's awesome. That might get you hyped for like 5 minutes versus something that could like change your life and change the way you look at things and change the way you handle things. And I kind of call that the bottom of the iceberg. I think mental skills, good mental skills training, is the what and the how of every, or the why and the how of all of the what's, mm-hmm. right? Whereas motivation is like, get out there, be confident, you can do it. Or like, hey, just relax out there, right? Just take a deep breath. But mental skills is, why should you be confident? How do you be confident, right? Why do you need to relax? Should you even relax? How do you actually relax? Why are you taking this deep breath? And how do you actually take this deep breath? And is this even working for you, right? Instead of just telling you all of these things mm-hmm. to do, it's background, it's backbone, it's support. And all of a sudden you start buying into these things. And now you give all of these things you're doing purpose and reason. And I don't think it's hard to do anything properly mentally without a purpose. And I believe if you have a purpose for everything you do, like, one, you're going to be better at it. Two, you're going to buy into it more, and you're probably going to reach potentials that you never thought you could reach just from doing something with more of a purpose.
Man, I may go work out or do something positive after this, man. What do you think, Harry?
I think you should just take some time, man. Be mindful. You know what I mean? You don't have to go work out. You know what I mean? Just chill, man. Just like,
thanks for that, man. I appreciate
being more aware, you know, getting into your zone.
Whatever you need.
Because I was about to do some push-ups, but I'll hold off on that.
See, you always do upper body. Like, why don't you do some legs if you're going to go to the gym? Like, do some legs. Don't skip legs. I'm going to get you a t-shirt. Never skip legs.
I'll show the listeners later the legs I've been working on, man.
Don't.
Don't see that. So what are people struggling with right now? What do you see that like is really a challenge for some of the folks that you work with?
Specifically with like everything going on in the world, like pandemic and everything.
Yeah, I mean, like, what are you having to work through?
I think the hardest hitters right now is dealing with change, dealing with inevitable change, and dealing with the uncontrollable change, right? It's not like we're choosing to change right now. It's not like we're choosing what's happening. It's things are changing, which like human beings naturally like avoid change, right? Like that's just our first instinct is to avoid change. And it's also to stay as comfortable as possible. Like we love staying comfortable. Like if you really think about it, like we turn the air down in our house because we're too hot, right? Or we turn the heat on because we're too cold, because we're uncomfortable, right? And like, I thought about this example the other day. You know, like in like eighth grade science, we learn about homeostasis, right? When like something comes back to equilibrium, right? Our body, right? When our body gets too hot, we literally start to sweat to cool our body down because we're uncomfortable. And if we get too cold, our body starts to shiver, right? And we get goosebumps because our body's like, no, we got to warm up, right? We don't like that uncomfortable feeling. And so I think that is the physiological reactions, but like our mental reactions are like way more impactful than that. Like, right. We hate being uncomfortable. And so I think the biggest thing that I'm having to deal with is like, we don't know how to handle change. We don't know how to handle uncomfortable change, and we don't know how to handle uncomfortable change that's completely outside of our control that we can do nothing about. And so it's like, kind of like the triple whammy. And so a lot of what I do is like refocusing people on making sure the only thing you can really do is can control whatever's in your control right now. And like, if you really break that down, it's not a lot, right? It's how can you be the best version of yourself for a Zoom call, or for a podcast, or for a virtual presentation, right? That's all we can do right now. And I know it took me personally a while to like swallow that pill, because like, I want to be out there. I want to be traveling 27 days a month, but I can't. And so the first step is accepting that this is actually happening, right? Instead of like this facade, pretending like this isn't actually happening. Everything's fine. Like, we're going to be fine. It's like, is everything okay? Like, I'm one of my biggest things I do is talk about realism. Like, I'm as real as it gets, because I don't believe in BSing myself, because I don't think that gets us good results. But I also don't believe in being super, super negative about certain situations. So I'm very real, like, okay, this is happening. Like, I'm probably going to be home until February, right? And so now that I've accepted that this is happening, now I can figure out how I can be the best version of myself while I'm in this situation. And by figuring out what I can control within all of these things that I can't control. And it's hard and it's not easy. And that's like a daily thing I'm trying to do. Like, it's daily acceptance, like knowing like this is the life we live right now, like whether I like it or not, it is. And how to adjust the best, but how to really give all of my time, all of my energy, and all of my effort to the things I can control versus giving it to all of the things I can't, and creating unnecessary stress and unnecessary anxiety and you know, letting that ripple effect to bigger things and scarier things. And so that's hot hitting topics right now in almost every conversation that I have.
That's powerful. And I love how it's interesting too, how you, all the things that everybody else is going through, you're going through them too yourself. So I love how, you know, that you're applying the different concepts and teachings into your own life. If there was one thing right now that one piece of advice that you could give to the listeners, what would that one thing be?
I think it's my same answer I give every time I'm asked this question, and it's to get into the present moment. It's to get into the present moment, because the best things happen when you're in the present moment, whether it's a conversation you're in, whether it's the workout you're about to have, whether it's a paper you're about to write, whatever it is. And even living in this pandemic, right? What we're going through now, like, we're so busy thinking about, well, when's this going to be over? When's everything going to go back to normal? When's this election going to be over? When's all this stuff going to be, right? Whatever. And then also like, well, look at all the stuff we've been through. I've been home for 5 months, right? I can't believe all this is happening. Like, whatever, all the things that happened in the past, when the reality of it is, sometimes we lose control of what we actually have control over. And that's right here, right now. Like, how can I be the best at whatever it is I'm doing right here, right now, whether it's being a parent, a significant other, whatever it is, like, how can I be the best me right here, right now? And I think that's a huge mental skill. Getting into the present moment is a huge mental skill. And literally everything is impacted for the better when you're in the present moment. Like, you enjoy things more when you're in the present moment. You're better at it when you're in the present moment. You're more authentic. You're more on it. Like, it's very rarely do bad things come out of being in the present moment.
I think you have less regrets, you know, or kind of, you know, regrets is a really strong word, but like things that, you know, whether it be something that happened yesterday and I'm like, damn, I wish I had spent more time doing this, or I wish I had said that, or I wish that I had really thought, you know, been paying attention, because I don't have my notes and I don't know what the hell I'm supposed to follow up on, whatever it is. Right. And I think that's one result of being president. The other is, you know, the ability to, you know, be grateful. We talk about, I think gratitude is a tremendous, you know, tool in a moment where that, you know, you're uncomfortable. You mentioned, being uncomfortable, and as humans, like, we're just, it's tough, right? I mean, I think the definition of comfort is ease and freedom from pain, right? And constraint. Ease and freedom from pain and constraint. So like ease and freedom, like we all want freedom. We all want it to be easy too. I think being in present allows you to kind of have a different perspective on comfort or being uncomfortable. And I think, you know, perspective's huge, you know, adversity, it's really about your perspective on it. And you know, either whether it be a pressure moment, whether it be something that happened that you can't take back or get back, it's all about the perspective and then the kind of like the action steps next. So, I mean, I love that. I love the fact that being present is a powerful tool. It's a powerful tool.
Talk about being present, and then Hannah, you mentioned comfort, and I just had a conversation with somebody around this the other day. I think every time there's a challenge, we always look at it like, okay, once we overcome that, then we're good. You know, right? There's always another challenge. And so what came to me the other day is like, it's not about overcoming the next obstacle or reaching the next goal. It's about, like, when you're dealing with a team, it's who are you going through that journey with? And because if you're going through the journey with people that are helping you grow, you're getting better, you're helping them achieve their goals, they're helping you achieve your goals, then that's what's fun, right? Like, that's the process of that is fun. And so I think, you know, to back to your point, Hannah, where everybody's always trying to, like, once I get to this, overcome this challenge, I'll be comfortable, right? I'll be set. And really, it's not about that. It's really about going through that journey. So I appreciate you sharing, you know, your thoughts around that with the listeners.
So Hannah, before we let you go, there's two things we're going to do. One, there's some rapid fire questions, some get to know yous. We'll do that. We got a few of those. Before that, though, you know, I wanted to ask you, like, what's next for you? I mean, I'm certainly you're working with the Phillies, and you know, I imagine you'll continue doing the great work you're doing in Major League Baseball. Is there anything else you're doing from a project perspective, or, you know, anything we should be looking out for that you're up to that we can share with the audience?
I can't tell you all the secrets, man. Like,
you know, listen, we ask hard hitting questions here on the Rim Tilters podcast.
It's hard. Hey, listen, don't come in here thinking we're not going to ask the tough ones. Okay.
No, I love it. I've got some things working. I've got some things working that I'm hoping to maybe launch at the end of the year, maybe the beginning of the year. But I'm really excited about it. So I can't give you any more. That's more than I've ever given anybody.
Right.
So.
Nice.
Right. We'll try to snag more, like, offline.
And I love keynote speaking.
Okay.
So I'm always, like, trying to get into that and hopeful one day I can be, like, this bomb ass keynote speaker.
Well, you will. Yeah, you will. Speak it into existence. I think that, you know, our organization's always looking for awesome speakers that are authentic, that, you know, that are real, that provide, you know, diversity and thought and certainly in gender and color and all the different things. Right. So we should certainly talk about that, because I think it'd be great. We, you know, to collabo.
Partner.
Best we can.
You drop an album, man. We could drop an album with that microphone legit, you got there, wow. Harry. Listen, you could drop one.
It's dangerous. It'll poke your eye out too, because there's some, you know.
Hannah, you can see where the budget goes. You see what I'm saying?
The budget goes to the hot hand. You know? The budget goes to the hot hand.
I like it.
No, but okay. So more about you here as we roll out this thing. What hidden talents might you have that we can share?
Well, as far as sports goes, I can palm a basketball as hard as I can.
Dang, DJ can't do that.
Dang. What position did you play?
I was the token, I don't know if you're allowed to say this, but token white girl 3-point shooter. That was me.
That's good.
I was really fast. I was always really fast. So I think that's why I was athletic, is because I'm 5'11", but which is not tall in the basketball world, but it's tall in the normal world. So I was always the tall, fast one.
Yeah. Well, that's funny. You know, my sister she's a senior. She just finished her senior year, but she's got another year of eligibility for health reasons, not COVID reasons. She is at Stanford, and she is a point guard. And she's tall, right? She's 5'8". You know what I mean? It's tall. But, like, she's diminutive.
Yeah, for point guard.
I mean, there's these guards in the Pac-12 and really just across women's basketball are 5'11", 6'1". You're like, what is happening?
I know. It's crazy.
There's these two twins on her team, Lacey and Lexi Hall. Out of the Pacific Northwest, and they can ball. They're really, really awesome, great family. But they're 6'1" and a half, and they're long, and so Tara Vandeveer loves long guards, right? Because and she should, right? Because of just, you know, their ability to play defense and they can get to the basket. So it's good stuff. Okay. If you were playing baseball or softball professionally, what would be your walkout song?
Or what was my walkout song?
You know what? Let's do what was your walkout song, because I'm curious.
So it was, I think it's called Timber. It was like, you know, it's going down, I'm yelling Timber.
Yep,
that was me.
Yeah.
That was my walkout song.
You know, we talk about mental conditioning, and a lot of the music isn't necessarily, like, positive, right? You know, but the athletes listen to it all. How do you manage that? Or do you even try to manage it?
Yeah, I've done a lot with walk-up songs, right? Because for me, a walk-up song is supposed to serve as, like, this is your, like, one thing that you can control in a game. And this, I want this song to like be able to snap you back into something, into some mindset that you're like, oh yeah, I forgot. I'm supposed to have a bulldog mentality, right? That's a common term in baseball. It's like bulldog, like I'm going to bulldog everybody over. Like I'm just going to mow people down, whatever. Like that's a thing. And so it's like, whatever you need to listen to, whether it's negative, super positive, funny, like a lot of guys do like kind of joking ones just to loosen them up. Right. Because like when they're on a pressure situation, what do you need to hear? And that's kind of always what I'm asking them is like, what do you need to message yourself? And so now we get kind of like a cheat thing, right? We get something else to message us that could potentially help us. And so let's make this song work for us and help us if it can in any way. So whether it's like, and it's different for everybody, right? Maybe you need something motivational and you need like the freaking Eye of the Tiger to come on. Or maybe you need something really funny. Like we had a guy choose like a song from The Greatest Showman, right? It's like this like kind of cheesy, cliche, motivational song. But every time it comes on, he's like, I kind of like it. You know, it like kind of loosened him up, made him smile, therefore putting him in a great place to perform at his best. So it's kind of like whatever puts you in the vibe you want to be in that you know when you're in this vibe, you perform at your best.
Yeah.
Or it gives you the highest chance of success. Let's put that vibe on, whatever it is. I don't care what it is.
We had a, when I played college baseball, we had a guy who came out to the, you know, that Barbie song.
I'm a Barbie girl.
Yeah. He had that song and it just, and I, you know, he could hit, he could play. So I think that maybe that was, you know.
No, we had like the sweetest girl on our team and she would come out to like heavy death metal, like, and then be like, rah, like screaming, and you're like, what? But like, then it became a vibe. Like, that's what she needed. Like, I love that. A question that I've heard asked, that's a good one. And I'll challenge you guys, you can use this too, but it's when you walk into a room, what song starts playing?
Ooh.
Is it like some quiet stuff? Is it overly obnoxious? Is it a vibe everybody wants to kind of get up and dance with?
All I do is win, 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 no matter what. I got money on my mind. Yeah, I remember when Russell was playing against when he was at NC State. He played Florida State, and Florida State had a good squad. Christian Ponder was the quarterback, and they won like in this epic finish. And that song played, and the stadium went nuts. Like that's what I remember about that song. It was like several years ago. All right, let's get back to these questions, man. We only got a couple more here. You know, books. You know, you're somebody, you know, who's always looking to improve and teach people how to improve. What's the last book you read or a book that you'd recommend right now?
The last book I read for the second time was Atomic Habits.
Okay.
I don't know if you've read it, but it's by James Clear and it's freaking awesome. Yeah. I love that book. And then for my overthinkers and overanalyzers of the world, The Subtle Art of Not Giving a F.
Yeah.
Great book. A lot of cuss
that
words,
book right so on my,
not
right
for
my,
the, yeah, not for the faint of heart, but baseball players love it because every three words, it's the F word. I love it because every three words is the F word, but it's really good. It's cool. The message is right. It's not about caring less, but it's about the things you do care about. Make those less. Like care about a lot, like care a lot about a few things instead of care a little about a lot of things kind of thing. And so it's like give all your Fs to a few things and don't worry about anything else. I love it.
Yeah.
Great reminder.
Okay. Well, last question for you. What did you prefer, softball or basketball?
I played them both my whole life. It was actually unique. I played basketball my freshman year and then I switched to softball my sophomore, junior, senior year. So, I was naturally better at softball than I was at basketball, but basketball was really challenging for me, and that's kind of why I went for it in the beginning. Long stories, but I'm probably going to have to choose softball.
One more. What's your favorite thing about Philadelphia?
You don't have to love Philly. You don't have to love Philly.
Passion in the city. That's my favorite.
Okay. All right.
The passion, the people are so proud, and I love that.
Well, listen, Hannah, thanks for joining us. We had a lot of fun with you. Hopefully we'll get a chance to maybe do a part two, part three of this and continue to conversations. And we look forward to, you know, to potentially collaborating and then do some stuff together.
Heck yes. I would love to.
And when you go to launch your whatever it is, let us know. And we'll give it some amplification, the social and all that. So
I definitely will. Thanks for having me. It was a blast.
You've been listening to the Room Tilters podcast. If you love it, do us a favor and rate us, write a review, and share it with a friend. We appreciate you, our listeners, and remember, you don't have to be sick to get better.